Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 292 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and he's Emil Evanesian. Emil, do you want to start with the good news or the bad news?
I would like to start with the good news, Dan.
All right, Emil, I say that because everybody knows that this whole show is going to be about Barcelona losing 3-0 to Benfica in the Champions League. It is all about a little sad things, a lot of things that people aren't too happy to hear about after the Ansu news a few days before. But hey, let's start with some good news. Let's start with Gabi getting called up to Spain after getting his first call up to the U18s back in September. So the meteoric rise of Gabi is following the meteoric rises of Pedri and Ansu Fati. Pedri might turn to his friend or turn to his new international teammate and say, hey, they will love you. They will love you this year. And then they will complain about you after you lose 3-0 to Benfica within a few months. And I feel that's already begun now. Not about Gabi, not blaming Gabi, but just a matter of people questioning whether Gabi is good enough for the Spanish national team.
Well, that, first of all, you know, out of hand, that's kind of absurd. But secondly, I think right now you look at just the way the Barcelona team is playing, and the whole operation just feels kind of bereft of confidence and ingenuity and inventiveness. I don't think anybody, at no point, you and I've done several of these, you know, sad postmortems, I think, over the past handful of weeks. I don't think the talent or the wherewithal and the physical aptitude has ever been in question. So I do think that I'm happy for Gabi. I'm going down kind of a rambly path that I don't actually even know where it was going to end. So I'm actually just going to say I'm happy for Gabi. I'm happy that he gets to enjoy a happy moment in the aftermath of whatever it was that happened yesterday that, you know, we're going to touch upon. But look, I mean, Barcelona are putting together what looks like the framework and the foundation of a good future team. There's not a match winner in the club right now, but I do think Gabi's going to be an integral part of the next great Barcelona team. He is a worthy senior international at such a young age, and he falls into that category of young players that we've talked about that are absolutely not overawed by the moment, are calm and even keeled in their decision making. Even if a pass, a shot, or whatever doesn't come off, you can understand what they were thinking, and you never get the sense that he was back on his heels or sort of flailing reactively. You always get the sense that he's at least given some thought to what the tactic is, and he's doing it the right way. And I'm frankly delighted for him. He deserves it. And I think it is actually good to focus on this positive today.
Yeah. I mean, I also don't think he'll play much, or he might not play much. Remember, a call-up is not necessarily mean that he's going to start the next international match. Spain, actually, if you remember, does need to win their their World Cup qualifiers. They put themselves in an early hole by dropping a World Cup qualifier for the first time in years and years to what I think of Sweden. Beside the point, that I think Gabi will actually be enhanced by what we've seen in Luis Enrique's system, where we will talk about Eric Garcia a bit later, but Eric Garcia is better for Spain. Busquets has been better for Spain over the last 5-6 months. So I would expect that Gabby, being of a similar cloth, and I mean, as in his skill sets are made better by that kind of 4-3-3 system that is played, it makes sense for him to be comfortable in this kind of Spain. I'm glad he's called up to this version of Luis Enrique's Spain. Now, speaking of playing well and not getting recognition that you're supposed to get, that's being the reverse of this, we're already into the bad news. That's how quickly we got to the bad news, Emil, because the Femini, the Barça Femini, dominated yesterday in their domestic campaign. But I just want to throw it in here at one point that the Femini were not on television. There was nowhere, I mean, even me in the States, usually I cannot watch it in Spain, but even you in the city of Barcelona could not watch the Barça Femini because they were not in any way televised, which is, yes, it is on the financial resources of the opposing teams. It is on, I mean, because again, they were on the road. So yes, it is on the stadiums. It is on the opposition teams who are just fortunate at this point, as in financial resources, to have teams. So it is not the fault of the Barça Femini per se, but the Primera division and Spanish soccer in general needs to take a look again and say, hey, we have the treble winners. We have the best women's team in the world. We need to make sure that people can watch them. And
yeah, man, it's unconscionable. I mean, it's, and I understand, like you said, there are kind of logistical and financial obstacles to having every game on television, as you know, the way the Barca men are. But at the same time, it's like you said, this is a spectacular collection of talent. Like they are the best club in Europe. They're the reigning treble winners or reigning treble holders, and they, along with other clubs, but just this collection of players, this team, I think is so good for big time women's club football. And there needs to be provisions put in place, or, you know, the infrastructure needs to be put in place for them to get the exposure that they deserve, that they've earned, that, you know, I mean, just honestly, having every one of their games on television is so far below the recognition that they've earned. They deserve to be celebrated. They deserve to be feted and known, and just they deserve to be famous, you know, like properly famous. And I understand the world as it is right now, that, you know, for some reason that is more difficult to make happen. But at the very least, the games need to be viewable.
Yeah. Well, my frustration with the team in particular is that this is Villarreal, who are new to having a women's team. Yes, but Villarreal has the financial medal as a club to be able to provide some kind of streaming, some kind of camera, some kind of anything.
Yeah, the owner of Villarreal is worth like $1.5 billion. And like, right, and so, he's the less rich brother.
Right. So there's no excuse. And earlier in the week, even Alexis Putellas had a 6-minute hat trick that I was excited. even those highlights weren't available for viewing globally. Said you had to go back and watch those highlights later on when they were cut together from that feed. So it was frustration all around, because I wanted to just at least watch the Femini yesterday before I ever knew what was happening with Benfica. We have just two more little pieces of bad news to get to. First, there is a chart that I've been asked about quite a lot in the Facebook listener group and on Twitter about the limited salary for the salary limitations, or salary limit, if you will, coming out for the 2021-22 season. That is, and I can tell you this, just like all the experts, I've been following Sam Marsden and all these people who are smarter and well-known about the finances of Barcelona and Dermot Corrigan than I. It looks like the number is 97. So Barcelona would only be able to spend 97 because that is a limit when you add the losses in of 487 million, which is what Laporta then basically made out, that those were last season's losses as big as possible. So he wrote off like a bunch of assets, 481 or 487 of the assets, which takes Barcelona's salary limit to 570 million. Which makes a lot more sense, because the second behind Real Madrid was 200 million for Sevilla. Mm-hmm. So all that said, they're going to make sense of it. We'll talk about it on another show when I can figure out. And then Tony Jean-Marty also threw in there that it's only the amount of money that they can use with new signings next season, not for the current players of the squad. Mm-hmm. I think he's right on that. So 97 million basically means that even if Barcelona did have the funds to sign some kind of major talent, they probably would not be able to afford their salary. So that would be the bad news about that and what that means. So get used to the squad you have, the very young squad you have. You know, we'll talk about that again later. And then the last piece of bad news before Benfica, Emil, as I stall here a little bit, is people, I want to give you an update on the stump in my backyard. It's been, again, cathartic for me to try to bring up this tree stump that is way, way, way too big. And it seems like I very much like more, has been overwhelmed.
More new and deeper roots.
Right. And the roots just go deeper and deeper and deeper. I felt like I'm whispering Bartomeu in my backyard, because every time I lop off a one branch and I go farther down to the stump, it just keeps going farther and farther down. And the hole that I'm literally digging a hole in my backyard, and the hole that I've dug myself is now 4 or 5 feet, when every video on the internet I watched went 3 feet down. And if that is not a representation of where FC Barcelona is at the moment, Emil, I don't know what is. And I think
that's the Bartomeu effect. Yeah.
Let's do the Benfica thing. 3-0 loss to Benfica. I want to start with Koeman. Kike Setien was let go 3 days after the Bayern 8-2. 3 days after that happened, Koeman is at this point supremely a sitting duck. And I don't remember the last time a Barcelona was this much of a lame duck since, actually, ironically enough, Rijkaard, when everybody knew he was going to be fired. And yet he finished out the last 2 months, basically after the announcement that he was going to be gone.
Yeah, they let him. Yeah, I think they let him finish out the season. And then, but I mean, the Koeman thing, I mean, because I saw that there was rumors, I guess, floating around that he was going to get the chop today, but then he didn't. And then I just saw that it was, he will definitely be in charge for the Atletico game, after which I guess we're going to an international break. That typically tends to be a time when teams will make these types of coaching changes. My assumption is that he gets the Atleti game, and almost regardless of what happens, I mean, I guess barring some sort of miraculous 4-0 win or something like that.
I disagree. I don't think it matters. And also, it's not going to happen. Like, it's this weird thing.
Oh, no. That's what I mean. Like, it won't happen. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but I think basically he gets the chop either, you know, Sunday morning or Monday morning or whenever they choose to do it. But it's done. I mean, there's no clawing this thing back, because whatever little bit of, because there were some kind of good vibes. I was on Twitter and just, I was watching the game with some people, the Levante game on, what was it, Monday night. And there were some good vibes in the aftermath of that, just because there hadn't been a calm, smooth sailing, business-like 3-0 win in, who knows how long. And it was very much, we don't want to make too much of this. This is one outing, and we have the Champions League coming up and everything. But it was, there was at least just some like good vibes for a night where you can say that, okay, every positive run, every upswing has to start from somewhere. It starts with a result. And I mean, it took so little time. And, Koeman put out a curious lineup. And I don't know. I feel like, I mean, the guys are playing hard, but I think they're playing hard because they're professionals. I don't get the sense that they're playing hard because of any kind of burning desire to save the coach or any, deep belief in his philosophy or his system. They're playing hard because they're proper professionals, and this is what they do. But I don't think there's anything left there other than the professional pride of the individuals.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I think, again, at this point, Barcelona are at a point where, the regardless of what Frankie de Jong or Sergio Busquets have said, the manager is so far gone, they've stopped playing for him. And I think even for Barcelona and Koeman, that when I saw the lineup, and this is another little discretion where, unfortunately for me, yesterday I was working almost all day, and I actually didn't even see the score. That's why you didn't hear from me yesterday. I did not see anything of the score. There's no YouTube match review for it because I didn't finish watching the match until about 3 a.m. U.S. time, which was about 8 hours ago, 9 hours ago before we started recording this. And, you know, I went to bed, tried to sleep on it. But all I did see prior to the match was the starting lineup. And I got this feeling in the pit of my stomach that, you know, the question that somebody had asked me actually where I was actually, ironically enough, doing a soccer broadcast. And one of the other people there asked me when the last time Barca was in the Europa League. And the answer is 2003, 2004 is when they were last in the UEFA Cup with the UEFA Europa League. And prior to that, it was the 2000-2001 season, once in the 90s. And then we're talking going back to the 80s. And for most of the 70s, while Johan Cruyff was there, it was called the UEFA Cup at the time, but it just had a different distinction, if you will. And the rules were different about how many Spanish teams got in. And since that time, since the Champions League has been expanded and more teams go through to the knockout stage, the answer is Barcelona is always there.
Yeah.
Basically, that's the answer.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because there was once upon, and I don't recall exactly when the various tweaks were made to, yeah, because what's the Europa League now became it's like an amalgamation of the UEFA Cup and the Cup Winners' Cup and everything. But it used to be the European Cup was, I mean, definitely the champion. I don't even think there, for a long time, there wasn't even a second team from each country.
Right. I mean, back in the 60s, it was called the Intercities Fairs Cup. That was the predecessor, even the earliest predecessor, if you will, to that. And that was basically an invitation where a bunch of teams would come in, and then that expanded over time. And yeah. So anyway, the point is, I want to go back even to the starting lineup here. Mm-hmm. Why I say it was dead on arrival. Between one player that would frustrate me or two players together that would frustrate me were one thing. But it was a combination of a 3-4-1-2, I guess you'd call it, or a 5-2, depending on what you think Pedri's positioning was. And this lineup, the reason, again, once I say dead on arrival, is that you could circle Eric Garcia and say, why was Eric Garcia picked over Mingueza? Good question. Why was Roberto picked over Mingueza? And now you're asking about the lineup, right? We've seen that Mingueza this year has been playing at right back, and I don't understand for the life of me why Ronald Koeman decided to detour from that 4-3-3 with Mingueza potentially at the back, at right back, and then Dest out on the left, where he was very good as a left back against Levante. And then you keep Araujo and Piqué in the middle. And I mean, as I've said about Eric Garcia, I think everybody else has kind of already done it. I again say that I believe in him, but I believe in him if he's a better version of himself. But he again had another terrible performance, and he should be deservedly, even at the age of 20, he should be put on the bench. And Lenglet should potentially get his minutes now. Eric Garcia, it's not working. He doesn't have, whether Barcelov is right, and he doesn't have the physical metal up top to contend so far. He's being pushed off the ball way too easily. It's not even his positioning, but it just overall as a defender, he does not have the savvy at the moment. He's being just ripped apart 1v1. And then it's a concession that Eric Garcia was the wrong choice when Araujo was switched over to the right. But then the question becomes, why would you start Eric Garcia on the right and Ronald Araujo on the left? If you were just going to immediately change it anyway, when the first sign of danger, when Eric Garcia had an issue on that first goal, because Darwin Nunez was more comfortable on the left. But how did you not know that Darwin Nunez, I mean, I told you I told everybody in the preview that Darwin Nunez has been playing off the left, coming off the left as an inverted forward, and then finding his space there. So why would you let Darwin Nunez get a one-on-one shot against Eric Garcia from the very beginning? And then Sergio Roberto, you think he's going to cover in behind? Absolutely not. And so, like, those little things from the jump, you knew that this was over, which is crazy. 3 minutes in, the goal happens, and everybody knew. I knew it. I knew. I looked at my dog. I'm like, it's 1 a.m. It's 2 a.m. And I have to sit. What am I going to do? What's going to happen here? And you just do it.
Like, I have to keep doing this for an hour and a half. Yeah, because I was out watching the game yesterday. And, you know, I mean, it was a nice night. So I probably, you know, might have been out for a little while anyway around the time or anything. But, you know, so kind of excited to sit down and everything. 3 minutes in, you take a shot to the gut. And my whole thought was like, man, I kind of committed to sitting here for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I have to, it's exactly like you said. I mean, you know, I'm not going to leave. But there was so little, I mean, other than half chances too, at no point did it feel like the tide was turning. I mean, there have been, I mean, we've seen games in the past, you know, not with this particular iteration of Barca, but with Barca teams past, where, you know, sometimes you have to, you eat the early goal, you know, something happens, whatever. But you get the sense that everyone's a little bit sheepish. Everyone's a little mad, but they're pulling it together. And this is going to be, they're going to fight back. This is going to be a competitive game. I don't know that I definitely didn't think Barca would score at all yesterday, but I didn't get the sense that they were ever truly on the front foot and that they ever really were exerting control over the game. I mean, they had, you know, there were individual moves and, you know, kind of particular moments that weren't abjectly terrible, but by and large, I mean, I never got the sense that Barca were really preparing to throw their own haymakers back.
Yeah. And I don't know what you pin that on or where you pin that to. I think one of it is obviously I usually go through the tactics and everything, but there was very little to analyze. Barcelona, the frustration is because they put on the performance they did. I don't need to galaxy brain what happened here. I think it's pretty clear. As I said, from the opening whistle, from the opening lineup, Benfica found a really easy way to exploit the spaces that Barcelona were leaving behind. And it didn't get any better when you took Frankie de Jong, who was playing in his, you know, his normal box to box role and doing what he was doing. And then they moved him back instead of switching to a 4-3-3. And that is, I think, what broke my brain a little bit too, even when Gabi came on for Gerard Piqué, which after he'd picked up the yellow looked like he was going to get a red. And it was an admittance that Piqué, not that Piqué wasn't the right choice, but he was the sacrificial lamb for what was the wrong choice to open in the game with. And then Gabi was supposed to be the hope and the prayer because he was coming off the bench, with no disrespect to Coutinho, the most informed midfielder to put in that kind of physical kind of game, which is crazy because he's 17. But yeah, it was an admittance that the lineup had to be changed. Things had to be worked around. And so instead of then going to a 4-3-3, which he kind of did in some senses with Sergio Roberto coming back to play, but then it looked more like a five at the back than it did actually a 4-3-3 at all, because again, it remained De Jong at the back with then Araujo and Eric Garcia, and Garcia moving over to the right. So just an admittance that everything was wrong.
Yeah.
It didn't really help the team because again, you took one of the better attacking options. That brings to the point of Pedri, that people were really getting on Pedri yesterday because he wasn't releasing the ball quick enough. To me, he didn't look like he had match fitness, but it didn't look like he had the rhythm of the match down. And that's what happens when you're on the snide and then you immediately get inserted into a Champions League game that's must win.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering, I mean, Pedri is, I think, at his best, the starter for Barcelona, but also you can't throw a player in who has been on the who's been on the bench or been injured and isn't ready for that moment again. Mm-hmm. And then up top, you know, it's funny, as much as I feel like people are going to say, oh, you make excuses for blah, 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 blah. The one player that I feel like I might make a little bit of excuse for is Luke de Jong, because all of his misses yesterday were once again another reminder that it's not supposed to be him. It's supposed to be almost everybody else other than Luke de Jong. And the one indictment of Luke de Jong goes back on Koeman, because Koeman fought for him. That the agreement between Laporta and Koeman was that, all right, we can't get you Wijnaldum, we can't get you some of the other players you want, but we'll get you Luke de Jong because he's available and we can get you him for free on loan from Sevilla. So that's a player that Koeman asked for. And that's the player, if you will, other than Memphis Depay, that Koeman got. And whatever Koeman thought he was going to get out of Luke de Jong, not only has it not happened, but it's not going to happen. Gosh.
No, I mean, I don't.
Goodness.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, I think it's exactly like you said, because there are elements of things that the guy does reasonably well. He is not cut out to be, you know, leading a line for Barcelona. Like, he's not the number nine for Barca. He's particularly not the number nine. He's the kind of guy that, you know, he might have thrived on one of those vintage, just stellar Barca teams where kind of enough of the attention was just diffused all over all of the teammates. And okay, could poach, you know.
We're basically comparing him to Jeffrey Suarez. So no, I don't want to throw
name,
but he was on. He did play in the Manita, right? If I remember right, he scored one of the goals.
He scored the last one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, no offense to Jeffrey Suarez, but he was so far below the talent of his rest of his teammates in that right. all-conquering side. That is basically what Luke DeJong is, where I don't want to see him until the last 15 minutes of a game. And if he is starting for your team up top, you're probably not going to get a goal unless one of the other forwards is scoring it, or they're setting it up for Luke DeJong on a platter, which is exactly what was done for him. And he failed to do that on two different occasions, one of which would have been offside, the one where he kind of bumbled it off his knee / hip or whatever.
That one was rough.
It was offside, but the ball should have been in the back of the net.
How do you not accidentally put that into the net?
Yeah. And I just want to see it go in the net, even if it's offside. Goodness gracious.
Oh, yeah. They don't even have to count at this point.
Either, Emil.
Yeah, they don't even have to count at this point. Just because, I mean, I kind of think of the goal that he got against Levante, which was, you know, Sergiño Dest put it perfectly. I mean, essentially played him through to the penalty spot, and he was able to slot it home from there. And I mean, it's kind of like you said, if Luke DeJong is leading your line, and I don't want to be critical of Luke DeJong as such, but, you know, kind of Sevilla is a good team, and, you know, he was a part of that team, and they are a really good team. But in this sense, if Luke DeJong is leading your line as he was, I guess, being expected to lead the line last night, you're not that good. Just like, it's the harsh reality. It's, you know, at some point, I don't know where the match winners were yesterday. I mean, Frankie DeJong looked decent, you know, before the move backwards. You know, he had moments, he looked decent. Memphis was game, but he didn't really generate much of anything. And so I don't know who the match winner was supposed to be, where the sort of stroke of brilliance was supposed to come from.
Well, I think the expectation would that it would come from Memphis. But the other thing I would say about trying to analyze this match, and the reason why I'm not, again, trying to analyze much of anything tactically, that other than Ter Stegen, who had his worst match in about a year, Ter Stegen, he was just bad. He was flat out bad. Maybe Barca's worst player, which is crazy to think, but potentially Barca's worst player, which you can't have at a European night. But other than Ter Stegen, the players that played poorly yesterday were the ones that you almost, and unfortunately, the 17-year-olds and 14-year-olds on the internet have figured out are going to be Barcelona's worst players. And I think that was part of the frustration too, that Sergio Roberto, which is a player that many people are out on, should never be at the club that, you know, they say, and why is he wearing, why was he given the captain's armband at one point in that match when other captains had come off? And not only did he get the start after being out for a game and immediately handed to it, he was worse than Dest on the other side, where the players who I expected to not be up to snuff yesterday, that being Eric Garcia, that being Luke DeJong, that being Sergio Roberto, and then even Piqué had a rough one, and Busquets was not great yesterday. And it kind of affected even the players that I expected to play well. Ronald Araujo had maybe his worst match of the season, which is saying something, yet he was leagues better than Piqué and Eric Garcia. And Memphis was fine in the match. Memphis did, I mean, he was creating a bit. He was finding a few spaces, but there was a lack of cohesion. He seemed like he was completely alone up on an island where Luke DeJong wasn't really combining with him, wasn't really helping. And then he and Pedri did not look prepared to play next to one another. And again, the admittance of off the bench, yes, Fati was never going to come on early, but by putting on Mingueza, Gabi, Nico, and even actually in this case, Coutinho, having played against Levante, by throwing Coutinho as well in the 68th minute, he may not be a young player, I think, Coutinho, but what was Nico and Fati when they came in, and Oscar in the 89th minute, why even put him in the game? What were those young players supposed to do, right? How do you expect a young player to change the fortunes of a game? How are they supposed to be the ones who are emotionally going to flip that switch when you're veterans, when you're leaders, when you're experienced players just cannot do that? And I felt like there was this push of the future generation is trying to push not only positivity, but to change the feeling that FC Barcelona as a club had on the feeling. And they're supposed to use their youth and their optimism to, you know, change what all Kool-Aids are watching, while the veterans and the experienced players and the ones who we knew would struggle in Europe against whoever they needed to be. Whenever there's a must-win game in Europe, the veterans and the experienced players are going to struggle. And it seemed like the experienced players were almost telling the young players, like, no, 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 we've lost this match. This is over. We're done. Yeah. This is a European night, and we're losing by more than two goals. There's no comeback coming. There's no goal even coming. This is over.
No, there was no wind in the sails. I mean, it was, and I think that's, That's actually a really good point that you make, because I feel like it was, as much as I mean, the result itself is obviously disastrous, but I agree that it had a certain demoralizing feel to it that, and I think you bring up a really good point that, because at this point, some of the guys who've been around, I mean, obviously there's, you know, Sergio Roberto, Gerard Piqué, and Sergio Busquets, you know, they've been around for, of course, they were there for the remontada against PSG, but they were also there for the shellacking that made that comeback necessary. And then the following year, they were there for Roma. The year after that, they were there for Liverpool. And the year after that, they were there for Bayern. And I do think there's a sense that I understand there's experience, there's kind of saving your energy and not kind of not running yourself ragged for a lost cause. I understand the sense of, you know, no need to chase every lost cause. But at the same time, there does seem to be a defeatist streak that adversity seems to beget adversity. And I mean, and I think this has been said in analysis of kind of all sports at all levels and things like that. When things start going wrong, and I mean, I feel like a little bit it's seeping in to the fans as well. I mean, probably more than a little bit, but when it seeps into the players and the coaches, when something starts going wrong and your first thought is, uh-oh, here we go again, and not some sort of dig your heels in. And, you know, because I mean, Barca didn't concede for another hour after getting, you know, getting clipped, you know, right away. Yeah. And at the same time, there wasn't an aggressiveness. There wasn't sort of, you didn't get the feeling that they were sort of consolidating, and, you know, they reeled a little bit, but they were sort of taking a moment, consolidating, and they were going to come back with their own version of something, like a really potent attack. It felt like they got hit, and they kind of, to some extent, they knew they were going to get hit at some point, and that it came so early really seemed to demoralize them.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, interestingly enough, it was a little over a week ago against Granada, watching that one and just getting the sense that, you know, Barcelona, that game, I stick with it. And that was just a rat team, bad performance against Granada, to put it lightly. They played like hot garbage. And then yesterday, you're right, that there were stretches, 15, 20 minutes, especially in the first half, as they were nearing halftime, that Barca controlled that match and were the better side. And even once Piqué came on, I thought before halftime, Barcelona were the better team, probably could have got a goal instead of conceding in the 69th minute. But once they didn't break through when they had their opportunity, when they were on the front foot, because even the advanced metrics say that Benfica should have won this game 1-0 or 2-1, if anything.
Yeah.
But Barcelona didn't register. Now, different places are saying that they got one shot on target. Some are saying they got zero shots on target. But it doesn't matter whether you got zero shots in two games in the Champions League or you got one shot on target in two games in the Champions League. Doesn't really matter. It's, you
know, that's really splitting hairs. Yeah, exactly.
And so for Barca to put up the attacking numbers that they have, yet, you know, seeing the frailties on the defensive line with Garcia, then with Ter Stegen being as poor as he was, with Piqué just lunging in and just having a terrible European night, deserving two yellows in the first 10 minutes. Barca yesterday, it felt like put themselves in the place where you lose that match instead of actually playing. I know I'm not making much sense. I'm again a bit exasperated, a little frustrated, because I usually like to just rely on tactics or the advanced metrics. Like Granada was easy because I could say, hey, look at the numbers here. Barcelona were hot garbage. But just looking and trying to compare these two teams, Benfica against Barcelona, Barcelona were not that much worse over the course of 90 minutes, but they still lost 3-0, and it felt like it should have been more. And it felt like they were never going to get a goal. And so I don't know how to parcel, Emil, or Tadu, you know, compare the feeling I have of what I've just watched and the numbers that tell me it wasn't even as bad as you think it was. But 3-0 is really bad, because in the context of winning and losing, it's terrible.
Absolutely. So as you were saying this, now I'm going to take about 30 seconds and try to talk this out, and let me know if this makes sense, because this kind of popped into my head when you were talking about it. You know, over the course of 90 minutes, or kind of minute for minute, Barca didn't look like the vastly inferior team, but the accumulation of all the events of those 90 minutes led us to 3-0. It's almost like in blackjack. If you play blackjack, each individual hand, the house's advantage is relatively minuscule. I mean, I think it's It's something like, you know, 1.4%, if I'm not mistaken. So that's fine. Now, the thing is, each successive hand that you play, you're essentially giving, you know, you're taking a 1.4% probability hit every time you play. And those probability gaps kind of accumulate over time. So I think Barcelona were moderately less good consistently. And the kind of that those moderate deficiencies sort of accumulated into kind of the large deficiency that we saw. So it wasn't like the Bayern thing where we were watching and, you know, you look at Bayern and the lineup and their players and how they're playing. And, you know, you can talk yourself into 3-0 being a perfectly acceptable deficit against them. Yeah. Whereas this one, it was just kind of slowly, you know, drip, but none of those kind of key inflection points went Barca's way. And I'm not saying that as sort of the ball didn't, you know, they didn't catch bounces. They didn't make their own breaks. I mean, they didn't catch any breaks, but they didn't make their own breaks. And I mean, I guess they probably did even catch breaks because, you know, what was it? Was it Nunes who hit the post when Ter Stegen was, went set sail and but I think it was just small deficits accumulated and there wasn't really any point where they clawed much of it back. And I think it just, this is sort of where we wound up. Like we never took a U-turn to a more positive direction.
Now we're asking questions that I hate that we're asking, but people are asking, you know, is it more beneficial financially to fall into the Europa League and win the Europa League? Or is it more financially beneficial to get rid of Koeman at some point because of the 12 million euros that he's owed? You know, want to hear a really sad number here. If you win, this is in dollars at this point, though, but if you win a group stage match in the Champions League this season, you get 3.3 million euros just for winning the match. So if anything, Barcelona have already conceded $6.6 million by not winning the first two matches of the Champions League, which is half of what it would cost to get rid of the manager who didn't do the winning, oddly enough. Oh, and man. If you reach the round of 16, even if you get through the group stage in the Champions League, you get $11.6 million, which again is pretty close. It's about €2 million short of what would be owed to Koeman. And then if you win the Europa League, so if you drop down in the Europa League and you win the Europa League, you still only get €8.5 million, which just again, easy math there, making the Champions League round of 16 and however far you get there. Cause if you accidentally win,
that's already worth more than winning the whole thing.
Exactly. In the Europa League. So the answer is that no, financially, it makes a lot more sense to stay in the Champions League. And then for those who think that dropping down the Europa League and winning that trophy is a moral victory, well, as you said, the risk of dropping to the Europa League and then not winning the Europa League is much higher than dropping down. And I mean, than just getting through the group stage and then getting crashed out by Napoli or Atlanta or whoever it may be in the round of 16, right? That takes down Barcelona in the round of 16. So no, figuring out how to navigate your way to second place in the group is basically the only option without this being an unmitigated failure in the Champions League this year, to me at least. And basically you have to win out and then need Bayern to beat Benfica twice. Mathematically, you can still have one of those Bayern results not going that way, but you also have to beat Bayern or you have to get some kind of result. You have to match the Benfica Bayern result. And then you have to beat Dynamo Kiev twice. And then you also have to beat Benfica back at home. That is all the things that have to happen because Barcelona bottom of the group. And looking ahead to Atletico Madrid, the reason why this is where we'll end the show, Emil, why we say, I guess Atletico Madrid, if Barcelona beat them 5-0 or something, what's that going to mean? What's that going to change? Well, the answer still is nothing. But the reason I say it's impossible is because there's no way at this juncture that Barcelona could overtake Atletico Madrid in Madrid.
No. I mean, you know, when I said that, it was firmly tongue in cheek, but that would, because I don't know. I feel like just because the world has a sense of humor, something like that will happen. But no, I mean, I don't foresee any way in which, I don't foresee any way in which Barca win. I mean, I think maybe, I mean, if you can take a point out of that match, it's a good point. I mean, and look, I mean, taking a point from Atletico in Madrid, like that's always a good point. And I know it's, you know, Barca, you know, the bigger club and this and that and everything, like that's always a good point. But right now, just given and I know Atleti aren't completely firing on all cylinders right now in the sense of, I mean, I feel like Atleti have another level themselves to get to. So this might actually not be the worst time to run into them, but I don't know that Barcelona are equipped to maximize their performance even against a a 7/7, 7/10 Atleti.
You know what I was thinking when I was on Benfica? That is an absolutely crazy question. What would have happened if Barcelona had lost to Sheriff? What would have happened if FC Barcelona had lost to a Moldovan team? That's what I actually cannot wrap my mind around. That Benfica is the best team in Portugal. They're usually in the Champions League group stage, and they usually get to the knockout stages.
Yeah.
Team in Portugal. And Barcelona are, right, they're the of the big three in Spain. They are big four adding Sevilla. They're in the worst spot at the moment, right? They're in dire straits because they're the lowest in the table. And yet they're not the team that lost to the Moldovan team in the Champions League, which is again, it's hard to parcel through. And I feel like as Kool-Aids, we're not being hard enough. We're not trolling. We're not, because, you know, it's funny, when as much as I would love to be celebrating that loss to Sheriff for Real Madrid, a bunch of people responded with that it doesn't matter if they lost that match because they know that they're still going to make the semifinals of the Champions League and they might even win the whole gosh darn thing. And you know, and that's a big difference, right? That Real Madrid can play like garbage, get beat by a Moldovan side. Again, once again, no disrespect to Sheriff, but also they're a small
Moldovan. I mean, a little bit. Yeah.
What was it? 1/60th of the salary cap that Real Madrid have. And then, but yet Real Madrid are going to say, we're Madrid. We're fine. We're Los Blancos. This is good. This is Champions League. This is our competition. And it's not going to affect them in any way. But Barcelona and Kool-Aids in general, you know, going back, and I've been reading rereading Jimmy Burns's book about Barcelona, and forever, if you're a Kool-Aid who's just 19, 20 years old or 30 years old or whatever, Kool-Aids have internalized their losses harder than Real Madrid fans for 100 years. I'm not kidding. That Kool-Aids is just in the ethos. It's what Kool-Aids do. They just internalize and they push it deep down inside themselves.
Yeah.
And a loss seems to carry over a lot longer than it does for Real Madrid, who seem to have this way of just letting their hair down and letting it all flow out the back like shampoo, and that's it. And they're done.
Real Madrid, I think, I mean, we've talked about the sort of the storm that swirls around Barca, whether, you know, the Barca managers or any players that fall out of favor, you know, with the local press and the fans and everything like that. But I think with Madrid, it's like that when it's good. You know, they booed Cristiano when he was scoring a goal a game for them.
That's true.
So I think it's the whole thing, like, we will never love you, so don't even worry about it.
Yeah.
It's just, you will never please us, so it's cool. Don't even worry about it. And, you know, you might get the occasional, you know, you get Iker Casillas that is, you know, revered by the Blancos fans, or, you know, Sergio Ramos, obviously, and, you know, kind of folks like that. But they're not hesitant to just absolutely discard superstar players, coaches, and it doesn't even have to be going that badly. And so I think the thing with Barcelona is there was so much of the ethos of Barcelona is in the not being Madrid, and everything that FC Barcelona and Camp Nou and everything kind of meant to, you know, Catalan people of the last century and everything like that. So I think there is obviously that emotional tint to it that I think Real Madrid simply doesn't have. And on top of that, for so long, I think the ethos of Barcelona included a certain level of mutual reverence between the players and the fans. And, like, you know, not to say that every player has always been popular, but I think there was a much more sort of heart-to-heart, almost like, you know, kind of touchy-feely loving relationship. But we're now in a point where so much of kind of the guys that were part of the furniture and the pillars of the last decade and a half of dominance are either completely gone, and in some cases gone in particularly kind of gutting and heartbreaking, unexpected last minute ways, or, you know, kind of on their later, if not last, legs and so this whole thing is sort of winding down, and I don't know that Barca fans know how to deal with it right now, because even in the lean years when Ronaldo left, Rivaldo was brought in, so he, you know, even in those down years you had Rivaldo to to cheer for. You had a guy who was doing the unthinkable and spectacular things. And then Ronaldinho. And so it's kind of, it's been this sort of strength to strength or legend to legend,
right,
sort of almost seamless handoff, where right now I think we're kind of floating in a weird spot where we don't even know who we're supposed to rely on.
Well, I mean, yes and no, because I feel like just less than a few days ago, that, and this will end the show, that less than a few days ago, we were all celebrating Ansu Fati in the new number 10 at Barcelona.
Oh, 100.
I would agree that there is, it's a weird thing to, again, compare the club and the place it's in now, because I get this, and you have to get the sense, with Messi gone, with Bartomeu gone, with the understanding of how bad things are financially, we're now, if in the book of Barcelona, we're back in a rising action. The young players, you know, a lot of really good young talented players have been found. They will, in theory, a bunch of them will improve and improve together. And we know at this juncture, yes, it seems like Barcelona have flatlined with Koeman, but we've already been through the lowest point. I mean, and losing 8-2 to Bayern Munich and being in financial ruin is a low point. And then losing Lionel Messi is, again, finally rock bottom. So those were the two descending actions, or I'm forgetting my literary terms. And now Barcelona can only go, not to say they can only go one direction, but it's weird to lose 3-0 to Benfica and crash out of the Champions League and be in your rising action. I know those are two diametrically opposed ideas, but that is what Barca is in right now. Financially, they are on the road, we hope, again, trust in Laporta here, they're on the road to financial recovery because it can't get possibly worse. And so in 2-3 years time, however long it takes to get back to where Barca have the financial metal to go out and compete with everybody, then, but we're already on that road to recovery. When it comes to the young players in the squad, again, some of those future stars are already integrated in the team and will just continue to get, improve and get better. And again, until Koeman is gone, until the, as we call them so many times, the sacred cows, until they've been moved on, we're going to feel like we're still in the old days, but we're not. We're in the new era. We're in the and Laporta doesn't help actually making you think of the old days because he's a former president. But
that's a problem. You see, you see Pique, Busquets, and Joan Laporta, and it's easy to feel like it's that time. Yeah, right.
Same thing with Koeman too, being a Barca legend, all this stuff. But no, I mean, Koeman will be gone in a matter of days, you'd assume. And a new manager will come in. And so that's once again, another change of where a new president, I put quotes on new president was been brought in to financially fix everything. It's going to take time. A new coach is going to be brought in who I hope gets a long, long leash. And they're going to be able to eventually, we'll hope, take this project to the next step. And then, and the young players as well. So it's so weird, Emil, that we lose 3-0 and I'm here I am. They're like, oh, positivity. But no, there is a light at the end of this tunnel and Barca are in the rising action. So I want to end it with that positive note. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I buy that. Because I mean, I do think in, strictly speaking, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, particularly in the sense of, I mean, what more, like you said, between the 8-2 to Bayern, the 8-2 Neymar, Messi, complete financial ruin. You know, I mean, there's the kitchen sink has been thrown at this club. And so I think strictly speaking, you're right. I mean, I think where I think people are sort of really, I almost desperate, I guess, is waiting for that new foundation and just the green shoots. I mean, I see the green shoots of Ansu Fati and, you know, Gavi and Pedri and, you know, but I think there's almost like a desire to almost kind of fast forward to that point. I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but I kind of want to get to the point where I wouldn't be sad if we just said, you know what, the heck with it. Like we're not going to get relegated. We're going to do this with these guys and just see.
The irony though, is that I trust at this point, Gabi to get 3 points more than I do Sergio Roberto. I trust Nico.
Yeah.
More than I do.
Yeah.
And so the Barcelona in a weird space where I actually think the younger players are at this point, the safer options, which is again, antithetical to what you feel in the locker room where you might get around the club because, you know, those who've done
agree
to be able to do it. So anyway, that's where we end this one. Atletico Madrid, I think we know what to expect, but there could be big news by the time even this show hits your ears. So just keep on Twitter, but also get off Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's a really dangerous place to be and make me throw an Eric Garcia. Yeah, I got it wrong. He wasn't ready for the spotlight and I hope he is someday. I still believe in him and his raw core. I'm going to watch him probably be really good with Spain and then have him return to Barcelona. His confidence is nothing. And he deserves to be on the bench. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough eating crow in the early going, but he's only been
Excited about I was excited about Kun Aguero.
Oh, yeah, right, right. Yeah,
I'll wear that, but yeah, but I totally was.
All right, that'll wrap it up for another edition of the show. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Close Facebook group is the Barcelona Podcast. Answer the questions, let you in. And then Patreon is how we keep making these shows. Always, always appreciate in the darkest of days how our Patreons kind of prop up the show and help us out over there. You can also listen to the show without ads on Patreon. And then on YouTube, I usually do the match review unless I worked 12 hours and we're going to record the pod and we lose 3-0 in the Champions League. So that's how you get match reviews pretty much every other time on the Barcelona Podcast YouTube channel. And most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Forza Barça.